Hello friends, today's video is going to be a little bit different format. We're going to discuss why you seem not to be able to win, why society seems to be collapsing, at least all the societies in the West. This is an issue that we see, and not only in the West, we also see this issue popping up in places like Russia, to a smaller degree in places like Japan, but not nearly as advanced as what is going on in the US and in the European Union. Why is it that middle class is constantly shrinking? Why is it that you can no longer live on a one-family budget? Why are families disappearing? Why are the countries being invaded, or rather inundated by low-skill labor, and sometimes high-skill labor? Why is it that salaries, if adjusted for inflation, as in the case of America, haven't risen since the 1970s, but the costs of everything have, many times? What is going on? This is the question most people, particularly young people, should be asking themselves. Generation X came in as everything was starting to collapse. The millennials and the Generation Z, they are at the tail end of this collapse. Ahead is nothing good, but maybe something good is ahead of the is after the collapse. The collapse is inevitable, and it leads itself to repeating itself on multiple occasions. So what is going on? Well, for that, we have to start looking historically. And let's begin back in the 1950s and 1960s. So even as far back as the 1940s, what we had in society was, we had large nuclear families. So we had the mother and the father, multiple children. You know, in the 1900s, the average family in, say, Russia was 8 children. Europe, maybe a little bit less. America was around 6-7 children also. But in the 1940s, it was still large families. Families with 8, 9, 10 children were not that uncommon. Families with 3 children, 4 children was an absolute norm. You wouldn't expect anything else from society. Usually in these families, what's now called traditional wives, where the wife stayed at home, taking care of the family, raising the family, where the main role of the woman was to be a wife and a mother. And that was the highest role society assigned, not because the woman couldn't do anything more, because that was the most important role in society, bringing up the next generation, bringing them up correctly. Meanwhile, the family was alive for one father who earned all of the money and was able to afford a normal lifestyle for the family. So you had the traditional wife, what's now called the trad wife. And it's called trad wife oftentimes by woke people as an insult. But this was a woman who was a stay-at-home mother. She raised the family, took care of the kids, helped them with their schoolwork, went to the PTA meetings, looked after the children. The children were raised in traditional families, traditional values, and children learned how to operate in society. And it's been shown multiple times that families that are traditional families, their children get ahead in modern times. Why? Because they have a base and a standard to support that. The fathers were the ones that were the breadwinners. They could afford a factory worker at that point could afford a middle-class income. He could afford to buy a house, which was maybe 2-3 years worth of salary. He could afford to buy a car, which often meant laying away money for several months, maybe half a year, to buy a new car. Everything was affordable. Meat was a standard part of the diet. Vacations were a normal portion of the year. This was what is now being called the Golden Age. Low debt, social progress that allowed children to grow up. Families were not mired in debt. Education, social progression was actually a norm. People could start off in low-income families, afford college, which was very cheap. Even for myself, when I went to in 1990, when I went to in-state tuition, it was $400 at NC State, which is more than $9,000 now for in-state tuition. Prices were affordable. Families could afford the good life without being mired in debt. But this had a negative, bad side. So each economic coin, as we have to understand, has two sides, the good side and the bad side. So what were the bad sides? Well, so what was the negative side of this economic good times? Well, businesses had to pay high incomes. They weren't going out of business, and the high incomes did create velocity of money in the system. So the income that you pay to your workers, they went and spent inside the economy, that then paid for other businesses, that then paid possibly by your product, and so on. Money was recycled within the economy. But big business was still aching because they wanted to pay lower salaries. Banks had a problem. People didn't take out a lot of loans. Now, of course, at that time, banking was also segregated by the Glass-Steagall Act in the U.S., by other measures in Western Europe to keep local banks local and big investment banks for the rich. But the banks wanted more money to play with, one, and they needed to give out more debt. But you can give out more debt if people are making enough money to make the purchases that otherwise, that today, are done on debt. I mean, who would have believed you in the 1940s or 1960s or even the 1970s that one day people would be doing multiple payments to afford their grocery bill or afford a pizza, break down your pizza into four easy installments? That's insane. That's absolutely insane. But yet that is the reality that we have now faced. Why? Well, the solution to the banking issue and the big business issue is multiple step. And we shall begin with this. Step one of the solution. Second wave feminism. That's right. But most people don't understand this. The people that stood behind second wave feminism, pushing through the ideal that the woman's place should be in the workforce, not in the family, that those are the very people who, by the way, benefited the most from it. I know, you're shocked. Why wouldn't you be shocked? How could it be? This was the prime movement of emancipation. And yet reality was, it was no emancipation. It was the prime move of enslavement. Enslavement of both the woman in the workplace instead of in the family where she had loving care. She had love from her family when now she had the factory or an office cubicle and a boss that didn't give a damn about her once she was out of the office and would fire her when comes time for retirement age anyways. And you had the problem of the enslavement of debt. What was second wave feminism? What was it pushing? It was pushing contraception. Chemical contraception in this case, and abortion. And it was a gateway to the sexual revolution. That's right, people like Rockefeller were behind all of this, pushing these new visions. This was a hookup culture. The degradation of the nuclear family was replaced by hookups. No-fault divorces. You come and go. Well, the problem is when you come and go in this kind of culture, it's not exactly prime real estate on which you can grow a family. No, it's not. It's actually quite the opposite. Abortions allowed women to sacrifice their own health for the easy hookup of a man. And they were convinced that this was good. There's still many are still convinced it's good. Women suffer a lot from abortions, something that's forbidden to be spoken about. Not just morally the damage that's often done, but also physically. Physical abortion does a lot of physical hormonal damage to a woman's body. That's now prepared for pregnancy, a pregnancy that's rudely interrupted. Not because of some medical needs, but because of social desires. For the man, who has now been told that being a father, being a breadwinner, taking responsibility is so passé, go jump from bed to bed, have sex with as many women as you can, it's all okay. And besides, any problems that arise from your sexual productivity is going to be taken care of by the woman. Yeah, you may have to hold her hand as she goes into an abortion clinic and conducts a procedure that's going to be detrimental to her health. But it's not your health. And after all, you'll probably have another girlfriend in a week anyways, and you can repeat the process all over again. Abortion, first and foremost, serves a single, irresponsible male that doesn't want to take responsibility for his own actions. Women in the workforce. That's the other thing that second wave feminism pushed. Women shouldn't be in the family, shouldn't have to raise families, shouldn't have to raise their children. Women should be in the workforce. Go in the workforce. That's where you're going to realize yourself. Not through loving children, not through a loving, stable family, but through cold competition in an office or hard work in a factory where you don't know people next to you. You're sitting in a machine. The machine is your new best friend. This was pushed by John D. Rockefeller III, disputed by Hugh Hefner. Hugh Hefner, the Playboy monopolist or oligarch. I created NARAL, National Association for Appeal of Abortion Laws. That's right, this wasn't a woman-driven issue. The women were brought on board and they were convinced to back this. This was backed by men. And men that had a very specific point that they wanted to reach. With Hugh Hefner, it's obviously easy. He was the biggest propagator of the hookup culture and easy sex there was at that point in the West. Rockefeller was a banker. Bankers need debt. That is, they need you to be in debt. Paul Ehrlich, the population bomb. That was another thing that drove a lot of this movement. Nixon even set up a commission to study issues of the population bomb. Now we're looking at a population collapse across the world. Even African countries that are still growing, their growth rates are collapsing. So in the matter of the next 5 to 10 years, maybe 20 years for some of them, they'll go into negative growth. Negative growth, that is, there is not enough children to replace the population, leads to economic collapse. Welcome to reality, ladies and gentlemen. Children drive the economy. Old people do not. Old people consume. They do not produce. Old people suck up the resources they have laid aside for their old age. They don't lay resources aside that can be invested in something else. Old people do not pass down a lot of inheritance anymore because that inheritance gets used up in their end-of-life cycle, whether it's medicine, hospice, or so on. A lot of even the housing that a lot of people are thinking is going to get passed on is actually being taken over by banks, by private equity, where these people, the aged, they sell the right to their houses, to their property after their death, to these different banking organizations. In exchange, they get money up front right now where they're still alive. They're able to live in their houses until they are no longer alive. Then the house does not go with inheritance. It goes instead to somebody else, the bank. So solution one, step one, part two, the Rockefeller push. Equal rights amendment. Abortion on demand. Hormonal contraception on demand. Removal of home economics courses. That's another thing that was removed from a lot of schools. Children are no longer taught how to balance their budgets, because God forbid if you balance a budget, you may not go into debt every time you see a commercial for something that you like on television. Sex education in schools, which actually had the opposite effect. It actually promoted sex. It's been shown in multiple studies that children who become desensitized to the concept of sex, just as all of society around them is desensitizing to their concept of sex. Message campaigns to delay marriage and motherhood, or to annul motherhood at all. The anti-children movements in the West that are now being banned in Russia, in China, and other countries. Full-time careers for women. And full-time careers for women is great. Why is this great? Well, that's step two. You've primed the real estate, you've primed the propaganda market, you've gotten people to buy into this insanity, and off we go to the races. So step two is reaping the benefits. Who's reaping the benefits? Well, the bankers are reaping the benefits. The big moguls are reaping the benefits. The people that are actually pushing all of this are reaping the benefits. What are these benefits? Well, for the big industry, why, it's simple. When I increase the workforce without increasing demand for the workers, I decrease salaries. So when women go into the workforce, because they've now been convinced to go into the workforce, they are now in competition with men. I mean, salaries fall. I get a choice. I'm the employer. I now have excess employees or wannabe employees, and I get to be picky. I get to push lower salaries onto society. I get to push what? Oh, higher hours. That's right. The 40-hour work week becomes an antiquity. It becomes something of the past. Let's try 50 hours or 60 hours, or let's just try living in the workplace. You had companies like Google who was telling you, oh, we've got unlimited snacks and drinks and ping pong tables for our employees, which translates into we've invested pennies to keep you there for hours longer that we're not paying you extra for. We're paying you a base salary off of a 40-hour work week, and you're working for us 65 hours. That's great for us. I mean, we get a half a week free off of every employee. And if the employees don't even realize it, instead of bragging, hey, I get to eat all the chips I want and drink all the soda I want, which is destroying my health, sitting behind a computer constantly without seeing the light of day, which is destroying my health, but I'm putting in those extra hours. Hey, this is great. Hey, this is great for the employer, of course. Increased hours? That's right. That all translates to bigger profits. But that's just the industrial side, or the what soon became the IT industrial side. Because then you have the banking side, the explosion of debt. Consumerism is being pushed harder than ever, and is becoming further and further out of reach of regular families. Why? Because very quickly, as per design, the one-income household is becoming an antique. It's becoming something of the past, something you read about, the golden age. Golden age has slipped away. Women's emancipation is supposed to bring everybody up, but instead the salaries are collapsing, hours are growing longer, and if you want those things that you could have afforded before with large down payments on a house or buying a brand new car for cash, just putting away 6 months worth of part of your salary to buy a new car, well, that's no longer happening. Because welcome to the fact that salaries are not growing, they're falling, if anything, and that started in the 1970s. Coincidence? I think not. Debt, that is credit, is now exploding. But this is economics, ladies and gentlemen. As I said, this is a two-sided coin. So if there's initial benefits, there's got to be initial costs. And what were those costs? Well, one of the biggest costs right off the bat was a smaller family, or no formation of the nuclear family at all. What used to be five children becomes two children, becomes one child, or becomes no children. Divorce skyrockets, 50-60% divorce rates. That means the children that come up in broken families are less stable, they're more prone toward addiction, more prone toward unemployment, they're more prone toward having mental problems. Loneliness, depression, suicide all skyrocket. People become dysfunctional. They think that buying things, consumerism, is going to replace the hole in their soul, the hole that was filled previously by God and by family. Well, it doesn't. It never has, and it never will. Consumerism is consumerism. You get the initial dopamine rush of having to buy something, and then it wears off. And then you wonder, why did I buy this item? And then that comes in the depressive state of, oh yeah, and I have to pay for this now. And this repeats over and over again. Unemployment increases. Obviously, unemployment increases because now you have a lot more employers than are employees that are needed by employers. So somebody has to pay unemployment benefits. As salaries are falling, government is having to shell out money to unemployment to keep people from being on skid row. Given a government income collapses, or it starts to shrink at first, but it collapses later on. Why? Because salaries are falling. That's right, salaries, income tax, are falling instead of rising. Even if things are looking now like they've increased volume-wise, if you actually look at what it would have been if the employees, you had fewer employees with higher income, you're actually losing money. Social costs are passed fully on to the government, and those pockets are emptying, facing national debt and increased taxes on workers. What else? How else is government going to raise money? It issues debt, and it increases taxes. Taxes on workers, because the rich get out of their taxes. They have loopholes. They have investment strategies. The average worker does not. That's why, by the way, pensions are now becoming more and more a thing of the past. Step three, the feedback loop activates. So you've now convinced women to move into the workforce. The quantity of children has collapsed. You fast forward one generation, 20 years, and what do you have? You're facing a much smaller possible workforce. Why? Because there's fewer children. There's fewer children for jobs that teenagers used to take up. There are fewer children for jobs for adults used to take up. Which in a normal balanced market would mean what? Wages will be forced back up because you have a smaller pool of employees. You've kind of blown the chance. You've pumped up the employee base, and now that employee base is aging out, and there's not enough of an employee base coming behind it. Profits start to fall because now you're being forced to pay higher profit, higher salaries. New debt contracts also fall. Families are debted out, but when the income starts to increase because the employee base is getting smaller, people sort of have more money that they can pay for their debt down, or they can buy things with cash instead of having to take debt. It's a natural state. It would have balanced itself out if it was left all to itself. But that's the whole point. It never would have been left to itself. Why? Because the very big bosses that created the situation, or their children in this case, want to keep the good times rolling. How are they going to keep the good times rolling? You got to break the feedback back loop. You got to go around it. It's not acceptable that this has to correct itself out. How do you go around it? Well, that's easy. That's actually easier than you think. Employee pool must be enlarged. But how do you do that? That's when you bring in immigration. Sure, you have to buy out a lot more politicians. You have to change the laws and rules on that govern immigration into the country. But by increasing immigration, especially low-qualified immigration, sponsoring illegal immigration, laws have been changed that give amnesty to illegal immigrants, thus spurring more legal immigration. You get this great, great benefit of wages fall even further. Because illegal immigrants, immigrants in general, but illegal immigrants in particular, are willing to work for a lot lower. They live in much lower quality of life because they're sending a lot of that money out of the country. So they're willing to live in conditions that your employees are not willing to live in. This is where you get things like, our people are not willing to do these kinds of jobs, like say pick fruit or vegetables. We have to import labor to do that. Really, that's interesting because right up until you open up the gates and start importing people, the poor, there's always a class of migratory poor that went from farm to farm picking fruits and vegetables. But suddenly, it's all too good for them, even though their own employment base and their own wealth base hasn't improved. Why is that? Because again, yeah, you're bringing in semi-indentured servitude. You're bringing in semi-slaves that are going to be doing it for you at a much cheaper rate. So you're cutting under the market. And debt explodes even further. Why? Because consumerism is becoming even less affordable because salaries are collapsing even further. Debt credit for everyday items. Well, as I'm saying, now you're getting to the point where you're having to use credit cards to pay for your groceries or for that pizza that you want to eat, because that pizza is now a luxury item. It's not something that you can do. Meat becomes a luxury item, even hamburger and things like that. For the bankers, this is great. This is the most wonderful time of their lives. But again, like everything else, this has a cost. And what is that cost? That cost accelerates, because that cost is now over 50% of children born out of wedlock. Marriage is a minority now. Loneliness, depression, suicide are continuing to grow even faster than the previous records. Mass shootings, gangs, when the streets are raising the children because the parents are all working. Mass welfare, because simply put, it's cheaper for somebody to sit on their behind if they're a citizen, get some kind of money from the government to go work, because the work jobs are gone. Friction with new immigrants. It's one thing when you get a certain amount of migrants or immigration into a country, particularly skilled immigration, educated immigration, and that assimilates. It has no choice but to assimilate. They're the vast minority. They will assimilate in the local culture. Oftentimes with the first generation, but definitely by the second generation. But when you get a certain critical mass, that assimilation starts to freeze up. It starts to break. And after a while, you start forming ethnic ghettos where there is no assimilation. Quite the opposite, the local neighboring areas may start to get assimilated into the other culture. Government income taxes fall even further as wages continue to collapse. Money is now taken out of the system. Money now flows outside the country because now you have immigrants that are now temporary work immigrants or illegal immigrants, and they're sending their money back to their families. So the country as a whole's treasury is becoming more depleted. It has to issue more currency, more fiat currency, to cover up the holes in its current in its volume of money, because that money is going outside the country, and it's producing value outside the country, not inside the country. Social costs are passed fully onto the government, whose pockets are yet even further emptied, forcing skyrocketing national debt and increases in taxes, property taxes, other forms of taxes onto the average working guy who's now already being crushed by debt. Again, feedback loop activates. Why does it activate? Because there's only a limited amount of people that are willing to move, leave their country, leave their village, leave their town, go to a fully different country with a different culture and work really crappy jobs at low salaries. Sure, professors and engineers may be persuaded to move, higher-end people, but these are a small minority of people. It's a whole different thing when you have lots of engineers and lots of other people coming in that don't have jobs as engineers waiting for them, and they're now taxi drivers at best, or working washing dishes in some restaurant. Or worse, when you have massive amount of people with no skills coming in. So what do we do when this feedback loop begins to fix itself again? Because again, the number of people willing to leave their countries is limited, and they start to run out. People that have decent enough lives that they can survive, maybe even prosper in their own country, are not going to take the high risk of moving to a different country and going through all the hardships that it would take to learn a new language, to learn a new culture, adapt, and try to break through in society, especially the people are older. The young are more apt to do this, the older people are not. They've got family ties, they've got emotional ties, they're not just going to pick up and go all by themselves. So the feedback loop, because of the natural quantity and quality of immigrants is limited, the natural feedback loop is going to start kicking back in again. And again, salaries are starting to rise, debt is starting to fall. What do we do? After all, that isn't what we want. So the solution is, to the feedback loop, new immigrants must be found. Must be found and motivated, not just found, but motivated to travel. How do you do that? The best form of motivation, it seems, and turns out, to fall in line with a lot of American and Western European foreign policy is war, revolution, engineered famines, and engineered economic collapses. So while you're out trying to grab the resources of the world, if you happen to crash that society too, or cause a civil war by getting different factions to fight each other out, you generate great waves of refugees. That's right. That's your potential new immigrants. You force the people that would otherwise have never left their homelands into leaving their homelands. Look at countries like Libya that had the highest level of standard of living in not just North Africa, but in Africa itself, and higher than many European countries. Now it looks like a Mad Max apocalypse. Syria is the same thing. We've seen the exact same thing happen in Iraq. We've seen this happen numerous times in Sub-Saharan Africa, in Northern South America, that Central America land bridge. The countries in those areas are destabilized. Revolutions happen. Drug wars, famines, out and out war between nations. All of this generates refugees. Refugees are cheap labor. Cheap labor undermines the labor costs of your own people. Repeat, rinse, and repeat. And this continues and continues. Of course, this can't continue forever, because sooner or later you get to the point where your society is collapsing. Your own people are now fighting it out inside your own country against these new immigrants that are coming in mass. Merkel bring in 1 million, mostly young men, refugees out of the Middle East and Syria, North Africa, and by the way, a lot out of Kosovo and Albania, did a big number on the society in Germany. It caused a lot of Germans to leave, it's caused a lot of pressure, it's caused the growth of the Alternative Future for Deutschland party, out of nothing into the largest party in Germany today. This has been repeated all over. We see this in the United States, where tens of millions of people were let in by Biden, where they absolutely opened the border, but it had been going on for years and years before that. It's continued into England. London is now a British minority city, along with most other cities. We see this in Ireland, where the last big protests that turned into riots all happened because of mass immigration, in this case Ukrainian immigration. That's putting the local Irish out of jobs, where people are, the government's paying benefits to the refugees that are coming in. That's while the salaries are falling and continue to fall for the local population. We see this all over Europe. We see this all over North America, north of the Rio Grande, including earlier in Canada. We see this in Australia and New Zealand. We've seen some of this in Japan. But the people they moved in were so rabidly anti-Japanese, in this case Pakistani immigrants, that the Japanese government actually fell and a new government came into power. We see this to a limited degree in Russia. The Russian people seem to be much less tolerant of it, and the government's having to deal with it faster and sooner to break the same cycle. But it's the same people causing the same cycle, the same type of people. They're looking for quick wins for themselves. They don't care what happens to their societies. These are the same, very same people that call themselves a global elite, the citizens of the world. Their loyalty is strictly only to their money. Their loyalty is not to their countries. Whereas previously the oligarchical class held a patrician view of their countries, where they may have seen themselves as the top, and often they were at the top of the food pyramid, they still held some kind of idea of owed service to their country, owed loyalty. These people hold none of that. So this is all created to a point where they are reaping as much benefit as they can, even as all the systems are collapsing. And look, ladies and gentlemen, let's be honest about this. Collapse is the only thing that's left. This is a runaway effect at this point, like they say about runaway global warming, which I didn't know. This is a runaway effect of the economy, of the destruction of the economies. Wars are sprouting. The United States is continuing to spread war and famine and economic collapse. Its very foundations, as now hooked to so many other nations on, are heading toward collapse and an internal collapse in the United States. Maybe after the collapse, after the dark times have come, something better can be grown out of it. How long the dark period will be, whether it's a few months or a few decades or maybe a century, no one can tell. And a lot of those decisions will have to be made by the people in power. You know, the people that take power after the present people in power are gone, one way or the other. And we will live and see. But that this collapse is inevitable is beyond any doubt. That this has been engineered is whether on purpose or engineered just for reaping profits is beyond doubt. That you will suffer, as most of the human race in these countries will suffer, is beyond doubt. How and what reactions are taken is up to you as a society, up to you as an individual. I hope this has clarified issues for people that haven't been able to understand why this is happening. It's actually all out in the open. It's not that hard to see. You just have to open your eyes and look past the matrix of what the supposed normal is to what the reality is, with a little bit of history imprinted on top of it. I hope you all have a good day. Don't lose faith. Fight the good fight and return your nations to you, the people that actually live in those nations, to you, the localists, you, the nativists, and not to these global elites that see you and every other human being on this planet as just biomaterial to make them rich and make them powerful and allow them to rule over something. God bless.